Good evening. I've got to tell you, our congregational greeting back to the speaker is weak. It really is. I don't know if you realize how important that greeting is. But that greeting, number one, it's comforting to the speaker. It lets him know that the audience is awake. It lets him know that, hey, we're enthusiastic and excited about being here. We're ready to engage into this study that you're going to enter into and help us with. And I don't know that we really fully understand what we sound like when we greet from the seats to the pulpit. I know a lot of people haven't had the luxury of being up here to hear that. But I know one thing. If I came in the back door and Matt Maudlin said, "Good evening, Greg, how are you?" And I said, "Evening." He'd think, "Man, what's wrong with him? He had a bad day. Not feeling very good. Something's wrong." It doesn't sound very warm and inviting. So let's try that again. "Good evening." There we go. That's much better. Much better. Well, the Sunday night evening amateur hour continues. You know, Will, our... who was it that spoke for us last Sunday evening? Stu, that's right, Stu. Stu made the comment last Sunday evening that he was surprised that he was asked to preach so soon after placing him and Meg's membership here. He said that we had so many talented and capable men in the congregation, he was really surprised that he was asked so soon to speak up here. And he's right, we do have a lot of men that are capable of doing that. And I got to looking back in my outlines and whatnot, and the last time, Stu said, I think he thought it would probably be 2 years or 2.5 years before he was ever asked. So I got to looking back in my outlines and in my notes, because I always date a sermon when I preach it and where I preached it at, and the last time I preached here was December 2014. Years and 4 months ago. So that tells me we're at the bottom of the barrel. We're getting ready to start all over again. But no, I appreciate the opportunity to speak for you. Since it's been so long since I spoke here, for the benefit of Brother Boone, the song leader, I want to remind you that I don't preach for very long. I've been places before where I've preached and I'm getting ready to wrap the sermon up and the song leader gets up to go to the restroom. So if you've got to go early, if you've got to go early and make it quick, okay? But no, seriously, about the number of men that we have to preach here, I did go back and look on the website, and I believe it was August of 2016 when we started having men from the congregation to fill in and preach. Does that sound about right, that date? I believe that's about the time that Zach and Jeremy left. And I just want to ask you, take a rough guess. How many men we've had preach since August of 2016. Now, we've had some visiting speakers. Brother McNally, Kevin's dad came and spoke for us, and Tommy Peeler. I'm not counting those guys. Just men of this congregation, August 2016. Just real quick, think about it for a second. See if you can come up with a number. I looked, 21 different men. And I hope we realize what a real blessing that is to have 21 different men that would, I mean, a congregation of this size, to find 21 that would even be willing to do it, let alone be willing and capable. And I'll put capable in parentheses. But 21 different men to do that, I think that's a real blessing. Well, our study for this evening, I want to talk to you for just a minute. There's this poster that someone made up that's in the north classroom where the teacher's training class is being held, where the men are assembling back by the resource room. And there's a poster that someone made up that's on the wall back there that says, "What do my life's choices teach others?" And every time I go into that classroom, I sit and I read that and I think to myself, wonder what I'm really teaching others by my life's choices. And I thought, you know what, I think I can make a lesson out of that. So I want to talk to you for just a few minutes about that, and I want to go from the angle of talking about our credibility and our believability as Christians, and talk just a little bit about our reputation and the examples that we set for others. So if you'd bear with me for just a few minutes this evening, I want to give you my thoughts on that. You know, usually a man or a woman deserves the reputation that they have. The proverb writer tells us in Proverbs 20 and verse 11 that even a child is known by his doings, whether his work be pure and whether it be right. Man deserves the reputation that he has based on what he's done. Many times we'll say that someone has earned their reputation. Now, some have the feeling that it just really doesn't matter what people think of us. And if you were to mean by that, that it really doesn't matter what people think of us because we're strange and we run not with them, as we're told in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 4, then I would agree with you. It really doesn't matter what people think. If what you mean by saying it really doesn't matter what people think of me is people think we're strange because we're Christians, then I would agree with you on that. And it really doesn't matter what people think. But usually that's not what is in the mind of people that say, I just really don't care what other people think. Usually that is synonymous with the idea of just living however we want to live, not caring what other people think, dressing however we want to dress without really taking any consideration into what people might think about it. We go out and we pierce whatever we want to pierce. We get all tatted up with things. We color our hair different colors. We style our hair just to draw attention to ourselves. And we look like we're someone from an escapee from a mental institution, and we just say, I really don't care what other people think. Most of the time, that's what people feel like, or that's most of the time why people say that. Or usually someone who feels that way is really saying, I'm going to live my life the way I want to live it. It's a free country. I've got my rights. And I just don't care what other people think, and they can go stick their head in the sand for all I care. Usually that's what people mean when they say, I don't care what other people think. But we ought to be concerned what other people think about us. Would you care if people thought that you were a communist? Would that bother you? Would you care if people thought you were a thief? Would it bother you if people thought you were an adulterer? Would you be concerned if people thought you were a homosexual or a lesbian? Would that bother you? Would it bother you if the religious world thought you were a Catholic or a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon? Would that bother you? Well, certainly these things would bother us, and well, they should. And if people look at us and view us as far as our Christianity as being anything insincere or hypocritical or being deceitful or dishonest, then our professed Christianity has no credibility, and we need to be concerned with what other people think about us. Once we do anything to harm our reputation, or once we do anything to harm our credibility or our believability, any effort we put forth to teach the gospel, especially by example, is destined for failure. Now, it's possible to be correct on things doctrinally. We can have everything cataloged and itemized just as it needs to be. We can quote book, chapter, and verse. We can quickly turn to passages that will support our views and our feelings on things. But by the lives that we live and the examples that we set, we've lost our credibility and our believability with others. Now, you may be someone who doesn't think credibility or being credible is really all that important. Let me give you two examples that I believe God placed in the Bible just to validate how important our credibility is. Turn, if you would, to the book of Mark real quick. Mark chapter 3. And we'll pick up the reading in Mark chapter 3 and verse number 7. And Jesus withdrew to the sea with his disciples, and a great multitude from Galilee followed, and also from Judea, and from Jerusalem, and from Idumea, and from beyond the Jordan, and the vicinity of Tyre and Sidon. A great multitude heard of all that he was doing and came to him. And he told his disciples that a boat should stand ready for him because of the multitude, in order that they might not crowd him. For he had healed many, with the result that all those who had afflictions pressed about him in order to touch him. And whenever the unclean spirits beheld him, they would fall down before him and cry out, saying, "You are the Son of God." Now just stop right there. Are the unclean spirits, are they confessing what is the truth? These unclean spirits were crying out, saying, "You are the Son of God." Are they professing the truth? Well, yeah, sure they were, weren't they? But notice Jesus' response in verse number 12. And he earnestly warned them not to reveal his identity. Why did Jesus not want them to make him known? They were correct on the matter. He is the Son of God. So why would he say, "Don't do that, don't say that, don't make me known"? Well, you see, Jesus didn't want the demonic world to confess his deity, because people would look upon the source of that confession, and these demons, they weren't credible witnesses of Jesus. So that's why Jesus recognized the importance of being credible. One more real quick for you. Turn over to the book of Acts, Acts chapter 16. In Acts chapter 16, we'll begin reading in verse number 16. And it happened that as we were going to the place of prayer, a certain slave girl having a spirit of divination met us, who was bringing her masters much profit by fortune-telling. Following after Paul and us, she kept crying out, saying, "These men are bondservants of the Most High God, who are proclaiming to you the way of salvation." And she continued doing this for many days. But Paul was greatly annoyed and turned and said to the Spirit, "I command you in the name of Jesus Christ to come out of her." And it came out at that very moment. Now this woman who was following Paul and Silas in Philippi as they were teaching and was telling people that they tell the way of the great God, was she telling the truth? Well, yes, she certainly was, wasn't she? Why then did Paul rebuke her and cast the demon out of her? Because you don't want the demons to confess the deity of Christ. Even though she was correct on the matter, she had the truth, she wasn't going to be a credible witness. And Paul saw the importance of credibility there. Now, lawyers, they understand this, don't they? Our court system understands this. If you put a person on the witness stand and you can somehow shake a person's credibility, if you can somehow get the jury to question whether they're telling the truth or not, even if that person tells the truth, their testimony won't help to win the case many times if they're not a credible witness. Our credibility is something that's very important, something that we should never take for granted. Now, let me see if I can make this. Well, first of all, Peter has a lot to say about our behavior and our conduct and the examples that we have. Look at 1 Peter chapter 2. You know, the book of 1 Peter is written to scattered Christians who were sojourners within the Gentile world. And he's just reminded them in 1 Peter chapter 2, in verse 9, he says, "You are a chosen race." He says, "You're a royal priesthood, a holy nation. You're a people for God's own possession." And then he tells them in verse number 12, "Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, on account of your good deeds as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation." He says, keep your behavior or your manner of living excellent among the unbelievers. We better be concerned with what other people think about us. We need to be concerned with what our coworkers think. We need to be concerned with what our boss thinks about us. We need to be concerned, if we're in business, with what our customers think about us. We need to be concerned with what other people think about us. You know, the motto of many so-called Christians seems to be, when in Rome, just do as the Romans do. Young people, you go off to school somewhere and you just do whatever the school kids do. We get on the job and we just say the things that people say at work. You know, sometimes we are just like a chameleon. We sort of turn in, or we want to blend in with our surroundings, so we just change our colors a little bit to blend in with our surroundings. Now, let me see if I can make this just as real and just as plain as I can for you. Because if we don't make any application of this, all we're doing is having a history lesson this evening. I remember one time when my father and I were running our trucking business. I don't know, I was probably about 22 years old. We did some business with a brother in Christ. He attended where we attended services. And he ran the shipping and receiving for a large manufacturing company. So we hauled some loads for him quite a bit. And we became in need of getting some loads to go out to the Kansas City area because we had a backhaul from out there, but we couldn't get out to Kansas City to get our freight picked up. So my dad said, why don't you go over and call on Brother such and such and see if we can't get some freight from him going out to the Kansas City area. Just make a little sales call on him. I said, okay, I'll go over and talk to him. So I went over to talk to this. And when I got there to talk to him, they said, well, he's here, but he's in a meeting right now. He's holding a safety meeting with the dock and foreman people and all the people that work on the dock. But you're welcome to wait for him. He won't be very long. And I said, well, okay, that's fine. I'll wait on him. So I waited around for a little bit, and she said, that meeting is down by the cafeteria. And she said, if you want to go on down there, why don't you? Because when he gets done, he may not come back up here right away. So just, why don't you just go down there and wait if you don't mind? I said, sure, I'll go down there and wait. So I went down there to wait on him as he was conducting this safety meeting with the dock people. And there was a bunch of people in there. Matter of fact, you couldn't even get in the room they were in. I was standing out in the hallway. And he was conducting this meeting. And all of a sudden, this brother started cussing and swearing and just using all kinds of foul language and berating these people as he was talking to them. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And it actually scared me is what it did. I mean, I'm 22 years old, just a kid. And so I didn't even stay. After the meeting was over, I ran out and got my car, and I left, and I went back to the office. And my dad said, well, you're back really fast. Did you? To talk to him about some loads, how to go out. I said, I didn't stay. I told him what happened, and he said, are you sure you heard what you heard? I said, Dad, I'm telling you, I heard it. He said, well, you're going to have to talk to him about that because, you know, you need to approach him with that in private. And here I am, 22 years old. This guy's in his 50s, one of the hardest things I ever did. But here's what I want you to learn from that. I talked to him about that. Told him what I heard, didn't think it was right, didn't think he was conducting himself as a Christian should, setting a bad example. And here's what he told me. He said, well, Greg, you're pretty young, and you've never really worked in the business yet, and you've certainly not been in a supervisory role. And oftentimes, to get the respect of your fellow workers, you've got to scoop down on their level sometimes to get them to really respect you. And so that's why I do that. I don't normally handle myself that way, but in that particular setting, I do to get their respect. And I thought, you know, I don't think I want to get people's respect that way. And that brother lost his credibility with me in a hurry because of that. And he never apologized for it, never said, you know what, you're right, I'm wrong. I need to correct that. He lost his credibility with me. And just think if he would have gone to some of his coworkers and said, hey, we've got a special speaker at church where I attend, and I'd like for you to come as my guest and give him a flyer for maybe a gospel meeting or something they're having. Zero credibility with the people he worked for in regards to that. Zero. Our credibility is really important to us. Well, Peter has something else to say about our credibility in regards to the workplace. Notice what he says in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18. He says, servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. We are to be obedient to those who have rule over us. Now, I realize he's talking about a servant-to-master relationship there. And thank goodness the blemish of slavery is no longer a part of our American culture today, but the principle is still there. Now let's make the application to the workplace. He says, you submit yourself to your employer, whether the things they do please you or not, whether they're gentle with you or reasonable, because you have this obligation. Otherwise, you're going to lose your credibility with your employer. Verse 19 says, for this finds favor, if for the sake of conscience toward God, a man bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. He says, you may suffer wrongfully, but you're going to do it for the Lord. He says, you may be in a less than ideal situation. People may treat you unfairly, but you do that unto the Lord. Do we do that? What that means is we can't be the one who sits around at break time or during lunch bad-mouthing the company and bad-mouthing our boss. He says, you need to be a credible employee. Young people, this being credible and believable doesn't just apply to all of us who are older people. You have a responsibility also to be credible. You need to be credible with your parents. We call it trust. You need to be credible with your schoolmates, with your teachers, and with your coaches. What that means is if you destroy that trust or betray their trust, you've lost your believability factor with them. Now, I know I can hear you right now sitting there going, why? Here he goes again, talking about being honest, being obedient to our parents. If you lie to your parents, you're going to lose your credibility. It's going to take you a long time to ever build that back up. Now, let me see if I can make that just as real for you as I can. I can remember when I was a sophomore in high school, so that would have been probably Jonah Logan's age. I was a sophomore in high school. Our high school basketball team was in the semi-state, so it had been right about around this time a couple weeks ago. My brother and I were going to go to the game. My dad went a lot, but this time he said he wasn't going to go because it was on TV and he was going to watch it at home. Well, my brother and I almost always drive separately because, you know, it's not cool to ride with your brother. And I had a car and he had a car, so. But I had just washed my car, swept it out, got it all cleaned up, so I didn't want to drive it. I know, Dwayne, you probably can't believe that I swept my car and washed it, but I did. So we get ready to go to the ball game, and I go out and get in the car with my brother, and he's like, what are you doing? And I said, we're going to the game. And he said, you're not riding with me, are you? And I said, well, yeah, I washed my car and swept it out and got it all cleaned up. I don't want to get it dirty. Man, why don't you just drive? And I said, no, I'm just going to ride with you. I knew something was up. So we leave. We go to the game. On our way to the game, my brother says, I really don't want to go to the ball game tonight, do you? And I said, well, yeah, sure I do. And he said, well, I really wasn't planning on going to the game. I was going to go over to my girlfriend's house and hang out. And I said, well, I don't want to go over to your girlfriend's house and hang out. And he said, well, I don't want you to go over to my girlfriend's house and hang out. But he said, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go over to my girlfriend's house, and you can take my car, and you can just, you know, go to the game, go driving around, do whatever you want. About 2.5 hours, you come back and pick me up. A whole lot. But my brother had a 70 Mustang Mach 1. Had a 428 Cobra Jet motor in it. He put a blower on it or a turbocharger. He took the transmission out and put a 5-speed short throw transmission in it. It was the fastest car on the south side, and everyone knew that car. And so I said, now, wait a second. I want to make sure I understand you correctly. You're going to let me take your car for 2.5 hours and just come back and pick you up later. And he said, yeah, that's right. I said, let's do it. So I went, took his car for 2.5 hours. I left black marks all over Greenwood. I mean, I went the cat's meow for about 2.5 hours. We agreed on a time. I go back and pick him up. Now, this is before cell phones, no smartphones or anything, so we couldn't just Google the score and find out what the score of the ball game was. So we go to the Pizza Hut, where I went after the ball game, find out what the score was, make sure it wasn't a blowout or something, and we go home. We get home, my dad's waiting up for us like he usually was. He said, hey, how was the ball game? We said, yeah, pretty good, you know, we lost, but it was a close game. He said, hey, I got up to go get something to drink. Right before halftime, they said someone hit a shot from center court. Who hit that shot? And my brother looks at me, and I looked at him, and I said one player's name. At that same time, he said another. And my dad said, well, which was it? Were you there or not? And we said, oh, yeah. And then I said the name he said, and he said the name I said. And my dad said, there was no shot from half court. You weren't at the game, were you? Where were you at and what were you doing? To this day, that haunts me. that I betrayed my parents' trust. I lied to them, got caught. My dad said, give me your keys. Greg, go get your keys. You can ride the bus to school. You can wait till after I get off work. I'll come pick you up after practice. It was a long time before me and my brother ever drove again. Don't ever question the credibility with your parents. Don't ever live in such a way that you lose your credibility with your schoolmates, with your coaches, with your friends. Well, credibility and believability and our reputation, the examples that we set are so important when trying to teach others. Now, you may really think that this only applies to preachers or to Bible class teachers in a public setting. But really, when you become a Christian, one way or another, we enter into the ministry, don't we? Sure we do. In one way or another, we do. Well, let's get your songbooks out and let's get ready to sing the invitation song. Ian read for us from 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. And it says, prescribe and teach these things. Let no one look down on your youthfulness. And by the way, you know, when we read that, a lot of times I think that we think Timothy was probably a teenager or maybe, you know, in his 20s. Timothy was approximately 38 years old when Paul wrote that to Timothy. He says, let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe. Paul tells Timothy, you be a living demonstration of the doctrine of Christ. In common language, what he's saying is, you practice what you teach. Timothy, you practice what you teach. And you know why I think that's so important? Because people would much rather watch a sermon than hear one any day. They really would. People would much better watch a sermon than to hear one. Now, one final thought I have for you this evening. You know, we're getting these T-shirts made up that say, ask me about the hope that's in me. And I don't know who all's, you know, signed up to get a T-shirt. Doesn't matter. I think John told me we had about 50 or so, I think, signed up. But just for grins and giggles, let's say everybody's going to get one of those T-shirts, okay? Everybody's got one of these T-shirts that says, ask me about the hope that's in me. When you wear that T-shirt, would you act differently than how you normally act? That's a good question to ask, isn't it? It's a good thing to think about. Would you act any differently when you're wearing one of those T-shirts than the way you would normally act? Our credibility, our believability, and our reputation and the examples that we set are all so important. And that's all I've tried to talk to you about this evening is to convince you of the fact that we need to practice what we teach. We offer the Lord's invitation this evening. If we can baptize you into Christ or restore you to faithful service, come while we stand and sing.